supplymybusiness.co.uk. Find suppliers and quote for work locally. Try us free until 1st of May 2016.
Paul Andrews and the Kent Business Bunker on Channel Radio.
Welcome back to the Business Bunker Show on KentBusinessRadio.co.uk on this Tuesday, January the 26th, with me, Paul Andrews, and the lovely Shirley Mansfield. Boy, that was a bit of MTV.
Excellent. Sure. Yeah. Is this microphone okay? Because we've had a bit of a fiddle with it.
That's not too bad. It's not the greatest thing I've ever heard, I have to say, but it's not too bad.
Okay, we'll stick with it then, shall we?
We'll try and go with it. But... yeah, if I abandon, if you see me going like that,
yes,
I need you to move.
I know, the listeners know exactly what you were doing then, don't they?
Of course, of course they do. I want to read this tweet, and I want to read it because it's relevant to what you're just about to read as well.
Okay.
Because it's the same person, I do feel.
Okay.
I've had a tweet from Well Styled, a lovely lady called Siobhan, and she says, Business Bunker's giving out great advice today. Do stay close to your clients. New business churn is expensive. Customer service is everything.
Well said.
Absolutely. And you've got an email from Siobhan as well, haven't you?
I've got an email from Siobhan. She says, small businesses that are owned and managed by women are being offered the chance to attend a unique business workshop in Tunbridge Wells during February. So Siobhan, as you mentioned, is a personal stylist of Well Styled and is launching an image and style workshop to help empower businesswomen or women returning to work. This is an interactive and intensive 3-hour workshop which runs from 10 a.m. till 1 p.m. on February the 23rd, and it's being held at the Tunbridge Wells Spa Hotel. The cost is £35 per person, and as usual with any events like this, it's a great networking opportunity as well. So, Siobhan's really pleased to see women at the heart of local community, so she's there to help. But during the course, participants will learn how to align their business and brand values to create a complementary signature style to stand out from the crowd and gain presence at business meetings, pitches and networking.
Fantastic.
Yeah, great. That's going to be good.
Good stuff.
So details of that, you can email Siobhan. So Siobhan, spelled S-I-O-B-H-A-N, at wellstyled, that's all one word, .co.uk. Or you can give her a call on 07905-897-338.
Fantastic. Thank you. We've had a tweet from Opinion Films who say, Vanillaware, Business Bunker, Shirley, could you shout out for Opinion Films? We film genuine testimonials for happy customers and clients for web and TV. Oh. And you can follow these folks on the Twitter at Opinion Films, all one word.
Yeah, they used to be called Fox Pops.
Yeah, we've also had a tweet from the lovely folks at New Appointments Group, the recruitment specialists.
Over in Sittingbourne.
Yeah, they're based in Sittingbourne, aren't they? But they cover the whole of the county.
They do.
Very well-established firm, very high-reputation firm. Mm. Andrew and the team, Andrew Cassell and the team, New Appointments Group, held in very high regard in Kent. And they say, afternoon.
Afternoon.
Where did the week go? It seems only 5 minutes ago we were listening to you last week.
Well, not me. You had Jules last week.
Yeah,
she
absolutely.
Was in with you,
so it's got better.
Yeah. steady.
Absolutely. Of course it has.
Yeah, no, time flies.
It does, especially when you're having fun.
Absolutely.
And especially when Jules is in Delhi with her belly. In Delhi. With jelly. Or something.
Moving on.
Yeah, moving on. We've also had a tweet from The Hunting Edge, who say, enjoying another great Business Bunker show. Please, could you give us a shout-out? Check out our website, thehuntingedge.co.uk. Thehuntingedge.co.uk, and that's from Andrew and Wren at The Hunting Edge.
Excellent. Okay, well, I've got an email here from Jackie Groundsell from the 1230 Club.
Mm-hmm.
Their next event, or a launch event, actually, is going to be held on Thursday the 11th of February, 12:30 p.m. And that will go on until 2 o'clock, although open networking will follow that. It's going to be held at the Orb, which is 243 Ramsgate Road, Margate. I'm not sure I know that one.
No, I don't. I've never heard of the Orb.
Oh, well, it must be a restaurant because it says they've got exclusive use of the restaurant.
Okay.
And the launch meeting price, which includes a two-course lunch, is £18.
That's not bad,
so
is it?
So that's really good. Kay Dunbar is going to be the meeting host for that event, which will include a mix of SMEs, sole traders, and provides you with intimate and productive meetings.
Cool. I'm glad you told me where it was, because I'm speaking at their event at the Orb.
Are
in
you?
April.
Oh, right,
in April. Okay. In a couple of months' time, and I'd never heard of it either.
No,
so
I hadn't, but it's
I'm
the
check that out.
A restaurant, yeah, 243 Ramsgate Road. So.
And talking about things, what I am doing.
What are you doing?
This is another one, which is Sevenoaks, the Sevenoaks Town Partnership, is going to invite you to the Sevenoaks Business Show 2016. And that is also happening in April. It's on Friday the 26th of April. Sorry, no, it isn't. That's a big fib.
Oh.
It's on Friday the 22nd of April.
Right.
It's 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. And it's at the Plaza Suite at the Stag. That's in London Road, Sevenoaks, TN13 1ZZ. And it will be opened by the Right Honourable Michael Fallon MP, Secretary of State for Defence. And there will be business networking presentations and exhibits. And there will be 100 goodie bags up for grabs.
Wow.
Ooh. Don't know what's in the bags, but whatever.
I wonder if those goodie bags are a bit like the Oscars ones.
It could be.
With, Chanel and Gucci and the Prada.
Yeah, well, it's bound to be.
Of course.
Sevenoaks, after all.
Well,
it's bound to be.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
The event is sponsored by Sevenoaks Town Council, Colquick, Stag, and Sevenoaks District Council. If you'd like to find out more about either exhibiting at the event or just attending, mm-hmm. or doing both, you can email Bonnie Tarling, and her email address is osl@sevenoakstown.gov.uk. That's osl@sevenoakstown.gov.uk. We will put a link to that on the Kent Business Radio website, and you can find out about it. It will be in our community pages and on our pages here. And we will be tweeting that out. And you can also follow Sevenoaks TP on the Twitter and find out details about it there as well. But do go on to it. I went along to it last year. It was a great little event, and very enjoyable it was.
Good. Okay. Are you worried about cybercrime?
Am I worried about who?
Cybercrime.
Cybercrime? I'm terrified.
Are you?
I lay awake at night.
Okay. Well, in that case, this is right up your street.
Absolutely.
So, Tuesday the 23rd of February, Kent and Victor Chamber are holding an event at Ashford, which is free to attend, but you must book your place to reserve your chair. They've obviously got a limited number of chairs. So this event is designed to help businesses to be more aware of and to reduce the prevailing threats they face, including malware, phishing, vishing, and invoice redirection fraud. So once again, that's free to attend for members and non-members, so basically everybody, at 7:30 a.m. till 10:30 a.m. at Invicta Chamber, Ashford, Tuesday the 23rd. I think that's a good one to go for.
Absolutely.
Great event.
I got one of those phone calls
Sunday.
Yeah, from a guy saying they're from Microsoft and would I log on and do some stuff. And I went, oh, yeah. What do you want me to do? He said, open Windows. I went, hold on a minute. Let me get near him. So I shuffled around for a little while. And then I went, okay, it's open. And he went, right. Now, can you tell me what your password is? I've got my password to what? And he went, your Windows. I said, no, they just open on their own. And he went, what? No, they open and run. I said, it's bloody cold, though. And he went, what?
What?
I said, with the window open, it's cold. And he went, sorry? And you asked me to open the window. I've opened the window, but it's cold outside. I don't know where you are, but here, it's in the middle of the winter, and you've asked me to open my window. And he went, no, on your computer. I went, I haven't got a computer. And boom.
I know.
Ridiculous.
Yeah. The best thing I do, when I've had one of those at home, is to say, hold on a moment, I just need to get a pen.
Yeah.
And then you just leave the phone on the side.
Yeah.
Open line. Yep.
Ridiculous, though, isn't it?
Not good.
Yeah. However, what is good is talking to our next guest. It's an absolute pleasure to welcome onto the Business Bunker Show Lawrence Ainsworth, author, business coach, high growth coach, an all-round great guy. Recently produced a book, Staying Ahead of the Hammer, which caused a little bit of controversy on Twitter over the weekend when people thought he was talking about football. But staying ahead of the hammer.
Yes, poor Sam.
Yeah, Sam had to get something in there, didn't he? Yeah,
he did.
There's only five teams ahead of us in the league. No, we're talking about real things, Sam, not your silliness. It's an absolute pleasure to welcome Lawrence onto the Business Bunker Show. I think you've been on once before, have you not, Lawrence?
Yes.
A long, long time ago.
Yeah, probably about show six, I
guess. Yeah, you were definitely in shorts, I seem to remember, when you came on. Yeah.
He didn't have a beard then.
He wasn't covering my hair, I think. Yeah,
probably.
He had hair, he wasn't shaving, you know, he got time off school to come in and all that kind of stuff. Lawrence, it's an absolute pleasure to welcome you back onto the show. Thank you so much for joining us. Why don't you tell us, I want to explore this in two ways. First of all, I want to explore your motivation for writing the book, and then I want to talk about what the book is about.
Okay.
So what inspired you to go and write the book?
I I like to be fair, I like to look around and see what kind of ideas there are in marketing. Mm. And I came across this site called Hinge Marketing in the States. Hinge Marketing. And I would suggest if anybody's interested in some novel ideas about marketing, go and have a look at Hinge Marketing. And they talked about creating what they describe as the visible expert. And they've done a lot of research which makes them different from other companies, of the economic value of being a subject matter expert.
Okay, yep. So we would call that a thought leader sometimes.
Yeah. And I thought, hey, this is a really interesting idea. Hmm. I had a bit of a background in high growth, which I can talk about, and from about 2011, it seemed to be an area that was pretty much underserved. Hmm. So I thought it'd be a really good idea to build some build a market in that. And then I kind of looked and said, okay, so what material is there out there? And I had a look on Amazon or whatever, and I found five books.
Right, okay.
Specifically on high growth.
Right.
Now, there's a couple of books about if you're 100 million, how you go to a billion, which is not relevant to most people.
Yeah.
But actually, five books. Now, if you
we're well past that.
Yeah. Absolutely. So if you compare that to sales, where there's hundreds of thousands of books, I just thought, well, here's a nice niche that's relatively open, and I can do that. So I thought I'd sit down and utilise my expertise and come up with something that people could use, and of course I could actually use to promote myself.
Absolutely.
So that was the motivation. I never had any expectation that I'm going to make an absolute bundle of money out of this.
No. I think
there were some stats which says most people's first book sell about 50 copies.
Yeah.
So I know I've done that because I bought 100. really, it's there as a statement to say, okay, I can actually demonstrate my skill in this area. If you're interested, then come back and talk to me more.
Absolutely.
It's very cathartic as well, writing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's quite stressful, actually, particularly if you're trying to run a business and write a book at the same time. It does get difficult because I needed a day at a time to be able to get into where I'm doing and then produce a reasonable amount of effort. You can't kind of do 2 hours and then step out.
Yeah. Writing and me don't get on, at all. I can't operate the crayons.
It is a labour of love. And as you know, I have a book too, which Lawrence proved for me, and I've sort of done the same for him, really.
Hmm.
But it is a labour of love. But when you start to organise your thoughts, it's amazing how it clarified in my mind all of the things that actually needed to be done.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You're kind of fading in and out a bit there, Shirley. You need to go at the end of that.
Here.
Otherwise,
it's the microphone.
I'm sorry about that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was your motivation for the book. I want to ask you, I kind of speed read the book, the copy that you sent me, the PDF that you sent me over the weekend. I was explaining to Shirley I had the weekend from hell, actually, so I didn't have a lot of time, so I kind of speed read it, but I am a quick reader anyway. And one of the first things I want to get you to clarify or discuss or think about is exactly what constitutes high growth.
Okay, from my point of view, I've just set an arbitrary figure of business growing about 20% a year or more.
Yeah, I can live with that.
Which kind of puts you in the top probably 10% of businesses if you're doing that.
Okay.
Now, it's slightly distorted because if you're only turning over 10,000, it's quite easy to do 20% a year.
Yeah.
But if you use a baseline figure of around about 500,000,
then
20% a year is actually going some. So it's really for those kind of businesses or more.
Yeah, okay. Okay, now that's cool. So we set kind of some baselines around it. So let's explore. Was there seven things that you kind of identified?
I identified seven things, and really we kind of the fulcrum of it is to say you really need to have, and we can have lots of discussion about that, but you really need to have a vision about your business which is greater than making money.
Yeah.
And the simplest example of that I think I can give you is Disney's, whose vision is to make people happy. And everything they do, every employee they have, every piece of process they put together is about making people happy. So those of you who have been there know that when you leave, everybody smiles at you. Every Disney worker smiles at you and waves at you and says, see you tomorrow.
Mm. I can tell you a statistic on that that can go in volume two. Okay.
Right.
I don't know if you know, we've been doing a series with the University of Kent Business School. Once a month, we've been exploring the 10 traits of entrepreneurs. And the University of Kent Business School have done a long-term project. This has been going on for years, and they've been working with loads of SMEs. And a couple of years back, they decided to ask them what motivated people to start a business, thinking that they knew most of the answers. The survey was huge. It was like 22,000 companies. It was a big survey. Less than 17% mentioned money at all in that response. The vast majority of people did not start a business in order to become wealthy or to make money in any way, shape or form, apart from a living, obviously. They had all kinds of other motivations. So you're absolutely right. Your reasons or your vision, however you want to put it, for doing something like that are really interesting, aren't they? Because that will set the scene of where you are and where you're going and what you're trying to achieve.
And that really kind of underpins your ambition as you go forward, because you were actually looking to do something greater than just what you're doing at the moment. And that's really what drives people. And once you've got that clarified, and then it's just moving through the other stages. So very quickly, the next one, again, which a lot of people find very difficult to get to grips with, is, okay, so what's the culture of your business? We've actually all got one. Whether you're a one person or a thousand person, it's just most people don't recognise what it is or understand the implications of having something which is slightly aberrant. So I kind of talk about that and how that works. And then I kind of say, OK, well, let's, now you've got that infrastructure in place, let's look at strategy and planning and then the more operational issues. And I actually put sales and marketing at the back end. And the reason I do that is because my experience, and certainly from the information I've found, lots of people, if I can caricature it, wake up and go, well, what am I doing here? Suddenly they're growing very rapidly. There was no instinct that they were going to do that in the first place. So they've sort of woken up in this semi-nightmare world and thinking, what am I going to do? And it's really helping them understand how they can put the other bits together then to support them to continue to grow, rather than telling people just to go out and sell, sell, sell.
Absolutely. It's interesting. Interesting, again, that you say that. Many years ago in a previous life, I worked as a management consultant. And one of the things that you found repeatedly is that businesses failed not because they didn't sell, but because they couldn't handle growth and they couldn't handle the sales they were making and they couldn't cope with the cash flow implications and all those kind of things. Their failure was inevitably not a lack of business. It was too much business and an inability to handle it. So you're absolutely spot on with that as well.
Yeah. So what I've tried to do is just tie that back and say, you can't actually plan your business unless you can understand how your sales come in.
Yeah.
So you need to be able to forecast sales reasonably accurately. And then you need to use that information to plan how you're going to grow your business to support those. I think there was a stats that came out in July which basically said 40% of all high-growth businesses, those who grow more than 20%, actually shrink immediately after a period of high growth. So that means nearly one in two probably end up back either where they were before or even worse off, because they haven't controlled the growth.
I was going to say, what are your thoughts and feelings on why that phenomena happens?
I think it's because it's probably to do with a weakness of a lot of business owners, and I think it's also to do with marketing, where wherever you go, people go, you've got to market, you've got to sell, rather than saying, actually, yes, you have got to do that, but you've got to be able to deliver what you've sold. In other words, keeping your customers happy and your new customers happy, whether it's 20 people or suddenly 40 people, is really very important.
It is tricky, isn't it? Because business failures are littered with success. You know, Kahoot, for example, when that launched mega years ago, the online bank just failed because it was too successful. It didn't have the infrastructure to be able to cope with it.
Absolutely.
And I've seen it with businesses. They're too successful. They sell too much.
Yeah.
And therefore they can't.
They lose control of the business.
Absolutely.
Wayne, you've got experience in high growth as well, have you not, young man?
Yeah, we talked to quite a few people, as you know, anyway. But one particular company was around 6 million, grew within 5 years to 13 million.
Right.
And then I had a really emotional conversation with the MD around the fact that, you know, things were out of control, et cetera, et cetera. And the bottom line, and just echoing some of the things that you're saying, Lawrence, was that they were operating their business as a £6 million business, not a £13 million business. So it's helping the guys at each of the stage to recognize the processes and systems that they have to manage the growth at each juncture.
Yeah.
So what we did, again, help them to be a £30 million business with the infrastructure
exactly.
to support that. So.
Yeah, no, absolutely. A very valid point. And it's also one of those things, isn't it, that as the MD or the chief executive of a business like that, at some point you have to recognise your own limitations as
yeah.
well.
And the most common one is people are frightened to recruit people who they perceive as better than they are because they think you're going to be dumbed down. Yeah. That is, sorry, lads, if you're listening, that's dumb, don't do it.
Yeah.
Hire the best people you can lay your hands on because you can need them. And the other thing is that I use the analogy, it's a bit like a disease, but if you're a £2 million business and you grow to a £4 million business, then along the line, a number of your management team are going to run out of capability.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're not going to be able to make that leap.
Yeah.
And again, if you're going from 4 to 8, you're going to have the same problem.
Yeah.
So one of the key things that I talk about is to go, okay, understand the capabilities of your people, figure out if you can train them to be better. If they're not going to make it, then put plans in place to put either hire new people or bring in somebody else to cope with that gap.
Absolutely,
And that's the same with all advisors, isn't it? It's not just staff.
Mm.
So, for example, your bank manager.
Yeah.
You know, the banks segment, but actually you want to be in the category above where your turnover is so that you get that extra support and help, as Wayne was saying, to actually start thinking about being a bigger business.
Absolutely.
You probably need to change accountant.
I was going to say, it's exactly the same because your whole business methodology, your business needs are all going to change. You know, you start off in a small business with a local accountant that can help you do your books and da-da-da-da-da. By the time you're a 10, 15, 20 million pound business, you need good solid tax advice. You probably need, you're expanding overseas, all kinds of things.
Yeah.
And you know, your advisors have got to be capable of doing that. Absolutely.
Lawrence is absolutely right. You need to get the best people that you can.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so we've cracked that one.
Good. Moving easy, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was sorted that out. That was no problem. We got that one sorted. So what do we come to next, Lawrence? What was our next kind of process in that step, in those seven steps?
Okay, so as you move through the book, the idea... It talks about those seven aspects, but really what we're trying to explain to people is that everything is interconnected. So the real difficulty in this is that you're spinning a number of plates at the same time, and you need to understand essentially how they interact. So if we move kind of down and we go, okay, we've done the strategy and the planning. Most people fail because they do the strategy bit. Let's go down to a really expensive hotel, spend 2 days, get ourselves a whiteboard, do all the stuff,
brainstorming,
decide where we're going to go and whatever, and then they walk out and it's like, okay, so the hard bit is to go, right, now we've got that, what we actually need to do is to work out the steps to get from where we are here to where we want to be. Who is it, how are they going to do it, what time scale? And again, if you're growing rapidly, if you assume that just for the sake of argument that a company's growing at 10% and they have a plan in place and you're growing at 40%, then you have to do in 3 months what the other business is doing in a year. So you can't kind of just leave planning to itself. You really need to be very active and you need to accept that a lot of stuff you're going to do is you're going to cast aside because the world will change before you get there. But if you're planning and you're keeping in control of it, you're more likely to do that.
Absolutely. It's again, one of those things that you come across time after time after time with entrepreneurs or business people that have started a business. It starts small. Their business is entirely focused on what their skill set is in terms of their knowledge of the market area that they're in, whatever that is.
Yep.
You know, print design, web design, you know, building widgets, whatever it is. And of course, their comfort zone is in getting their hands on the thing that they know about. As the business grows, it becomes more about planning, more about strategy, more about thinking about the future, more about analysing the numbers. No matter where you're coming from, you have to analyse the numbers and all that thing. And a lot of people avoid that because it's not their comfort zone.
Yeah. And I'm working with a guy at the moment who's quite sensibly got himself a lot of advisors. And the reason for that is because he's put his hand up and said, look, I'm pretty much number blind. It means absolutely nothing to me.
Yeah.
So he's got a bank of people and he sort of goes, this is what I want to do. Tell me what the answer is. And they come back and they tell him rather than trying to struggle on his own.
Yeah.
But going back to the numbers, that's another issue, I think, is the number of times I've gone into a business and you've asked to look at their profit and loss account and it's a default out of typically Sage. and there's big gaps. So, oh, look, this month salaries aren't in there, so it's almost right. So it's completely useless, absolutely useless. Yeah. And I tried to explain to people that actually, if you want to grow rapidly, you need to know more than that. Yeah. So, given your, since we're in a knowledge economy rather than manufacturing, what is the productivity of your earners? So if you're doing software development, right, okay, how much can a software developer generate in terms of revenue? Mm. And if it's 100,000 and you want to grow by 1 million, then you need 10 of them. There's no getting away from it.
Yeah.
You know, and then you might need a manager on top. And people just don't actually think in those terms.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and it might be slightly different, it might be bigger numbers. But it's just looking beyond the most obvious and saying, so what are the bits that really drive my business forward? What are the big lumps that I have to invest in? So, okay, if I've got a CNC machine and it can handle, you know, £500,000 and I'm doubling my turnover, then I need to find, you know, somewhere between £100,000 and £200,000 for bits of kit.
I need to say this, and I shouldn't need to say this really, but I do need to say it. Do you know, I come across this kind of thing so often that it's just scary. Yeah. And I, at the most basic level, I met someone, I operate as an angel investor and I get business plans all the time. And I met someone a couple of weeks ago and they went, I've spotted a gap in the market. There we go. Gap in the market, got this. So you're going to sell this product for how much? That's cheap. Yeah, well, so that's our model. We're going to sell it really cheap. Okay. Well, how much does it cost you to make it? And I just looked at me and went, what? How much does it cost you for the product? You're going to give it to people for 50 quid. Yeah, yeah. That's less than half what everybody else charges. Maybe there's a reason
for that. Yes. So why are they? Yeah. And the common one again is, so why are you going to be successful? Because we're going to provide the best quality product for the lowest possible price. No.
With the best customer service.
If you want to be cheap, then you're an IKEA, right? Yeah. And there's limitations. Or if you want to have great customer service, then you're a Harrods.
Yeah.
But you can't deliver a Harrods service on an IKEA price. It doesn't work. You'll go bust.
Absolutely.
So kind of moving on. So I kind of talk to people about just trying to demystify finance, and rather than talking about, you know, the acid test and all these ratios which make people run away, just say, look at the lumps of your business that are important in terms of they make the money, and roughly figure out when you hit your limit, and then you just know how to multiply it forward.
It's that whole capacity planning, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, it is.
Capacity, capability.
It is, because going back to the book, the reason I used the idea of staying ahead of the hammer was really because business simply failed because the organisation doesn't keep up with sales.
Right.
And throwing a hammer sounds fairly easy, but it's actually quite complicated. There's a lot of moving parts. Mm. And one of the key things is that you keep your eye line slightly ahead of where the hammer is. So as you rotate, you're in control of the hammer. And you pull it round and then you let it go and it goes where you want it to.
Yeah.
If the hammer gets in front of your eye line, God bless physics, the control now switches from you to the hammer.
Right.
And therefore the hammer will decide where it's going to go. Because
Where you're going to go.
It's a horrible mess.
Yeah.
And the analogy simply is that as a company, you are the hammer thrower, and sales is the hammer.
Yeah.
So you need to be kind of ahead of the hammer to control it.
Yeah.
So that's where it came from. But it is about planning and running that through the business.
Mm.
And again, you know, going on from finance, I then talk about organizational efficiency and processes and making them meaningful. In other words, what do I want to do? I want to do whatever it happens to be. I want to go into a new market. Okay, I need to put in place that lovely word KPIs, so that I know that my business is supporting what I want to do.
Yeah.
And if you set up the KPIs, that will also start to dictate what you need to do in terms of processes and how you put them together.
Mm.
And just giving people some very simple, there's a very simple graph in there, and a very simple, actually you can print it out, but basically a very simple diagram which you can just use, which says, you know, this is where we are now, this is where we want to be, I just need to map the difference.
Mm.
So regularly I can look at it and go, we were here, we want to be here. So simple one typically is debtor days go through the roof, right? Pull it, you know, that's the first thing you do. Number of businesses that have nearly gone bust because they've gone, we got so excited about doing the business, we actually forgot to collect the money.
Yeah.
Really?
Oh, absolutely.
You know, so you say, debtor days are 90, we need them to be 45, so somebody needs to concentrate on that. And that's just a simple one.
Yeah.
And you run it through, and you do that in different parts of the business. And if each bit of the business is doing what it's told, then when it gets up to you, the business will be moving in the direction that you want it to.
Absolutely. And you're absolutely right about that as well. One of the things I come across is when I look at people's P&L and you go, you, intrinsically, when you look at the bottom line of this, you're quite a wealthy company. But if you go back up the sheet, you haven't collected the money. It's all debt. You haven't got any money. And I go, yeah, well, yeah, but they owe it to us. Oh, that's all right then.
Yeah, but are they going to pay? And if they're Tesco's, it might take them 2.5 years.
Yeah.
Certainly according to the radio this morning.
Yeah.
So it's getting people to understand that actually growing rapidly is quite a difficult challenge. It's not beyond the realms of possibility because lots of people do it. But you just need to know how all the bits of the business connect together. Mm. And then once we get through kind of processes, I then talk about business development, and really in that I'm just talking about how you understand how the sales that you have connect through to your business,
right,
and what it means to drive. So at one end, if you're, let's just say you're a software development company, if you want to double your business, you double your people. Okay, and I've got a company that's doing that and they're growing at about 240% a year. So our biggest challenge is we need to recruit about 20 people in a year. So that's a bit more than one a month. That's quite hard when you're small. Yeah. At the other end, I've got a lovely small business that operates out of St Albans, and their business is driven out of YouTube.
Right.
And they are just about the most successful YouTube company in the UK.
Right.
And they've gone there since we've been working with them. Their revenue has multiplied by a factor of 25.
Wow.
But their organisation has actually only doubled because their platform is YouTube, which is why growth hacking works, because you get the technology and it's just like, I just make more of these apps, or I just have more people looking at my output, and I get more money from advertising revenue. And you need to understand how that drags on your organisation and therefore how much planning you need to do.
Yeah.
Because we'd all like to be at the YouTube end, but we can't all be that great.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's a completely different business model, isn't it? And that's what you've got to understand is what it's all about. Yeah. No, absolutely. Fascinating. Fascinating.
I know. It's a shame we've got to finish.
Yeah, it is. It is. But fascinating insight. Well, I want to kind of round this off a bit now with a couple of things, Lawrence, if I may. From your point of view, this is going to sound a bit stupid because the whole book is about this, and basically the easiest way to do this, folks, is to go buy the book and read it, which is a bit obvious, and we'll give you details for how you can do that in a moment. But have you got a couple of tips that you think, look, you really got to, you know, I'm going to shake you until you've got this on board?
It's not my own, I did borrow it, but if you want to grow, you have to answer one question, which is, if I'm your ideal client, why should I buy from you rather than your competition?
Mm.
What that's really talking about is understand who your ideal client is and how many businesses haven't got a clue. It's just out there, everybody.
Yeah.
And the reasons why people want to buy from you. And it's not money.
Mm.
Let me tell you, that's often at the bottom of the bottom of the list. It could be because you're close. It could be because you're nice people.
Mm.
My wife goes to a dental practice in East Kent. Now, we live in Sittingbourne, so it's a 45-minute trip. The reason she goes is because she hates the dentist, and he's so friendly and nice. She goes to him because he's the friendliest dentist she's come across.
Right.
Right? Yeah. And if he charged four times what he charged, it wouldn't make any difference.
Don't listen.
So don't listen. Yeah, it's all right. Okay. I deliberately haven't. Yes.
Landed.
So, but those things really drive. So you need
absolutely.
To absolutely understand who your customers are and why they're buying from you. Once you've got a grip on that, everything becomes easier. And the second thing I talk about is, you know, don't lose sight of the money.
Yeah.
Because if you're growing and you lose sight of the money, the banks look at that as overtrading,
right?
And that tells them you can't run your business.
Yeah.
And that means they will be very, very unpleasant,
which
in some cases might mean they shut you down.
Right.
So don't lose sight of the money and understand who your customers are. Once you've got those two, then the rest becomes easier.
Fantastic.
I think that's a really great question, which is, would I buy from me? If I was a customer of me, would I buy from me?
Yeah. I wouldn't. I hate me. I'm really rude to me. But I get what you mean.
Yeah.
Cool. Lawrence, thank you so much for that. We could talk about it forever, staying ahead of the hammer. Give us some details about, one, you and how people can find out about you and your website and what you do. Also, give us some details about how people can acquire the book and the formats that the books are in, and then we'll go from there.
Okay, right. So if you want to contact me, my website is managinghighgrowth.com. If you want to email me, my address is Lawrence with a U at managinghighgrowth.com. If you want to tweet me, my address is Lawrence with a U Exigent, because actually when I first started and I joined Twitter, that was my handle, and I haven't got round to changing it. So that's easy. If you haven't got any of that, just look my name up on Google and it'll show you my LinkedIn account and whatever. So that's not a problem. In terms of the book, it's available on Kindle, so it's available through Amazon as a digital version. You can buy a paperback version, and if you're really excited and you've got more money than sense, you can buy the hardback copy. It's available on Amazon, and if you just search Staying Ahead of the Hammer, that'll find it. If you can't remember that, just put in High Growth and it will come up under one of the search terms.
Fabulous. Thank you. Lawrence, thank you so much for joining us on the Business Bunk Show. Absolute pleasure to talk to you.
I've enjoyed it.
All the links that Lawrence just gave you are on the Kent Business Radio website, so you can find them all there. If you get stuck and you want to find his book and you can't, then you can contact Lawrence or you can contact me and we'll put you in touch with where to find it. But the links to the website and everything are on the Business Bunk Show. Lawrence, thank you so much. Thank you so much for joining us. It's been an absolute pleasure.
What fabulous guests.
Yeah, brilliant, isn't it? Been really brilliant.
Great. Could talk for hours.
Absolutely.
As long as we have tea and cake afterwards.
Absolutely. And now the emails and tweets have been piling up while we've been talking. I got a tweet from Natalie Bonet, the gorgeous Natalie, who will be on this very station in an hour's time. But she's saying, Vanilla Webb, hello. I'm doing some quick research to find out what Kent people think about arts culture in the county. Could they tweet me with a one-word description?
What about the existing...
I guess.
How it is now or how it would like to be?
It says what people think about culture in the county. Oh, okay. So I guess you can say whatever you want. Oh. You could say needed as one word.
Yeah.
Or you could say dreadful. Hmm. And that would kind of set the tone for what you were thinking, whether it was now or future, I guess. You could say all kind of words, but you're not allowed to say some of them.
You need to be careful. What's Natalie's Twitter?
Natalie's Twitter is Kent Creative Art. Okay. Kent Creative Art is her Twitter.
Excellent.
So do join in with that. I've retweeted it as well.
Okay. I've got one here from a new listener. So shout out for Debbie Hales, who runs Asbestos First up there in Medway Waterslade. So hi to Debbie. She's a first-time listener. So,
cool.
That's good.
Thank you. Your mic's fading out again. Sorry.
No.
Yeah, you might have to
swap over. Let me have a wiggle over to the other one then.
Yeah, sorry. I'll read some tweets. We've just got 35 more tweets coming, so I'll try and go through some of them before the end of the show.
Is that better?
Yeah, that's better. We'll do the fashion-related ones first.
We'll
catch up. Lawrence has said, is that a matching phone case and top, Shirley?
It is.
Oh, it's very good.
And Laura, it wasn't planned. It wasn't planned at all. It just happens to be one of my favourite colours. So.
Cool. Laura does say you're sounding loud and clear in the Eden Valley.
Oh, good.
And she says she's listening while trying to work out how to use her new pressure cooker.
Oh, be careful. Don't let it go too mad.
No, you be careful with that, Laura. If she's inviting me for dinner, I don't want to go around there and find it all over the kitchen ceiling, do I? Not that she's inviting me for dinner, but you can live in hope, can't you, really?
You might have just sown the seed there.
Yeah, so. Do you reckon?
You might have done.
Yeah. Mm. We've also had a tweet from the lovely Rachel Halger, who says, could you give us a shout-out for Eleanor Charity, please? And the business benefits to be had from supporting a charity. Absolutely. So a big shout out to the lovely folks at Eleanor Charity, and that's their Twitter handle as well. Supply My Business tweeted in, Martin.
That's Martin, Martin.
Who stepped in at the last minute to co-host last week.
That's when Jules was not well.
She was pre-planning a belly, a deli belly before she went, I think. Anyway, Martin said, I've been mistaken for many people in my life, but I've never been mistaken for Jules Serkin before. Oh, you poor thing. He needs trauma counselling, I'm sure. And Jacqueline Offin, who was a guest on last week, has said, fabulous, enjoying the Business Bunker show once again, and can highly recommend it. So thank you. Thank you, folks.
Excellent. I mean, spread the word. Mm. Okay. Well, I've got some dates for some networking breakfast meetings from Kent and Victor Chamber. Next one is Thursday, the 28th of January, which is at Base Point in Folkestone. And then Tuesday, the 2nd of February, which is at the Holiday Inn at Rochester. And there's also Breakfast with Furley Page Solicitors. Now, that's going to be Thursday, the 11th of February, at Chilston Park Hotel, which is in Lenham.
Fantastic. Cascade Insurance has said a big hello from us at Cascade Insurance in Ashford. Have a great week. Natalie has confirmed what I said. She says, Paul, exactly.
Exactly.
Exactly. You are right. It's just one word, whatever your feelings are about art. So okay. It's good to be good. Oh, I've been blown out.
Have you?
Laura has. She says... I'll let Barrister Broker, that's her other half, Russell, stick to cooking for you, Paul. He's tired out. He's tried out new dishes since you were last over for dinner. He's a very good cook, I have to say. Yeah.
Well, perhaps it's just a postponement rather than being
No, they're inviting me for dinner, but Russell's going to cook rather than Laura.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Right, okay.
And Russell is a good cook. He is. Yeah.
Excellent. Good.
Right. Do you know, it's that time now.
Channel Radio News Update.
It's that time in the show where we concentrate on a news update from the Federation of Small Business and some of the news that's coming out. First of all, I've got a fairly long email about the lovely and the world-renowned Zoe Cairns.
Mm-hmm.
And Zoe has been appointed to the FSB Kent and Medway as lead on policy.
Excellent.
And Zoe is going to be championing regional businesses at the FSB Policy Conference. Building on the success of the first policy conference in 2014, the FSB will host the next policy conference, Small Business 2020, Inspiring Growth, Innovation and Ambition, on Tuesday the 2nd of February at the Queen Elizabeth Centre in London. I spoke there once with Tom Peters, if you remember him.
Yeah,
yes.
In Search of Excellence, yeah. Mm. Right. In a rapidly changing business environment, the event will see key politicians, business leaders, policymakers, and FSB members come together to set the small business policy agenda for the future. The day will be hosted by leading BBC business presenter Steph McGovern. The conference will include three high-level sessions which will focus on rebalancing the UK economy, high growth, global future for small businesses and growing tomorrow's entrepreneurs, innovation and competition. See, this show isn't just thrown together. It seamlessly interacts in a nailed-on kind of... something like that. On the day itself, Kent businesses can watch live streaming of the conference via fsb-policy-conference.co.uk, where they will have a live stream of the whole thing. The Kent and Medway Regional Policy Lead, Zoe Cairns of ZC Social Media, will be attending the event to represent the views of the members in this area. If you want her to bring up anything in particular, you can email the office with your thoughts, feelings and questions. And the place to email is, or the person to email, is alison.parmar, that's P-A-R-M-A-R, alison.parmar@fsb.org.uk. Thank you.
Okay, right. The FSB is also talking about the living wage. So the government is urging employers to prepare early for the national living wage, which comes into force on the 1st of April this year. It's advising employers to take four simple steps to be prepared for when this becomes law. These are to know the correct rate of pay, which if you don't is £7.20 per hour for staff aged 25 and over, to find out which staff are eligible for the new rate, update the company payroll in due time and communicate the changes to staff as soon as possible. If you need any more information, go to www.livingwage.gov.uk.
Fantastic, thank you. Blimey, they're coming it, aren't they? Proposals for a Blackwall Tunnel charge. Oh. Cool, they do try it on, don't they? They told us once upon a time that the Dartford Tunnel was going to be free once they paid for it, and now they're finding everything they can charge us for. Anyway, there's a proposal to charge to use the Blackwall Tunnel. I suppose it's a parking charge, isn't it? Normally, it normally grinds to a halt in the tunnel. Do you have views? No, as if I would have a view on this. Do you have views on the possible charging of the Blackwall Tunnel? We want to feedback views on this and other South East London changes in the future. An event in Greenwich on the 27th of January. You can come along to the event you can book your place by going to fsb.org.uk. The London policy chairman, Sue Topolowski, OBE, will be chairing that event, and it's a public meeting tomorrow, the 27th of January, in Greenwich, to discuss the government's proposal to start charging for use of the Blackwall Tunnel.
Yeah, build another bridge,
build another bridge, yes. Yep.
Yeah. Well, there are plans for another Dartford crossing as well, isn't there? But they're trying to decide what to put in there and where to put it at the moment.
Exactly. Yeah. Lots of inquiries on roads, isn't there, with Operation Stacks being sorted out as well. So
absolutely.
It's all going on.
Yeah, and don't even get me started on potholes.
No.
£600 on tyres in 5 weeks.
I know, it's not good at all. Yeah. Not good. Yeah. Not good. And trouble is, with all the rain that's coming in today, the potholes just fill up with water and you can't see them. It's so difficult.
Absolutely,
Okay, automatic enrolment pensions inquiry has been launched. An inquiry has been launched by the Work and Pensions Committee into pensions automatic enrolment. The committee has asked small and micro employers in particular to provide written submissions addressing the effectiveness of the automatic enrolment process, the impact the process has on smaller employers, and how they plan to mitigate any negative effects suffered as a consequence of the process. The final day for receipt of submissions is the 3rd of February. So if you've got any comments on that, 3rd of February, and you need to go to, I think it is, www.parliament.co.uk. There's a massive URL here, Paul. Can we put a link up on the website for people, or is it on the FSB site?
It's on both. The best way to find these things out is on the Kent Business Radio website. There's a blog that's called News and Updates. And all of the things that we read out here go in there with all the links. So you could, and what I've done is I've kept them bite-sized. So basically, it's only a couple of paragraphs on each thing. You can read the overview. If you want to know more, there's a link to it, and you can link through to the full website with the full glorious, glory,
perfect,
gory details in pages and pages of government gobbledygook.
Mm-hmm.
Mm, but it's there under the blog pages.
Okay, fine. All righty. Are you going next, or do you want
me to
kick
go on? Next.
Go on,
it's
then,
about time I had a turn.
Yeah, go on.
Yeah. There's a business breakfast with Kelly Tolhurst MP, who's the MP for Rochester, and that is taking place on Friday the 12th of February, and it's from 8 a.m. to 9:30 a.m. And it's your chance as a business person in the Medway area to go and meet Kelly and to tell her your thoughts, feelings, wants and needs as a business, and to ask questions about government policy and doobie-doobie-doo and presumably shout at her and all kinds of things. And that's taking place at the Innovation Centre, which is the Maidstone Road, Chatham, on the 12th of February at 8 a.m. It's free to attend, but you do need to book a ticket. So if you go to kentbusinessradio.co.uk/FSB Kent and Medway events, there is a booking link there to book your free place on that Meet Your MP event.
Okay, we were talking about Operation Stack just a minute ago, and we've had there's some information coming in about smarter options for Stack. So whilst we all want a solution to Operation Stack, and as you're aware, the Chancellor has made £250 million to sort the issue available, the comment here is, in a knee-jerk reaction, deals hurriedly and was hatched behind closed doors. The local authorities from Highways England have presented their solution as a fait accompli in the form of a single monstrous lorry park in Stamford. Whilst this may appear sound at first glance, close scrutiny shows this plan to be flawed on various levels. It will not simply affect the local community, but the businesses right across Kent and beyond. It does not address the man-made causes of Stack. When the French industrial action finished and the UK helped with fencing to prevent migrant incursions, Stack has not been needed since August 2015. A single lorry park anywhere is simply going to cause more HGV congestion with no alternative access route or place to park.
Unless police stop every lorry on the M20, which will cause a stack itself, Highways England estimate that 30% of HGVs will try to bypass the Stanford Park and go to the tunnel or port. These will be turned back, which means they must leave the motorway and will result in even more lorries on smaller roads around Shepway and Dover. But there are smarter solutions to keep business and freight flowing, and there's some details that you can access via the FSB blog, which talks about smarter options for Stamford. So. Mm.
It's ridiculous. This whole thing is a fiasco.
Yeah, it is difficult.
It's Highways England. They're just not remotely interested in doing anything about this, and they're not remotely interested in joining the 21st century.
Well, my question through the last one was why couldn't we have a contra flow on the opposite carriageway? And they said that was too dangerous, and yet I live not far from the A20, and
it's a contra flow every day.
That's the contra flow every day.
It's nonsense. I don't know if you recall, I actually did a BBC TV programme about this back in the day, and it was ridiculous. And after it, and nobody from Highways England came to that programme, I have to say. But talking to some of the government ministers, I just said, you know, this is insanity, and you're not using technology. How about an app to call lorry drivers off at right thing, you know, and to give lorry drivers information? Because what was happening is, a lot of the foreign lorry drivers, not really being aware of what was going on, would just bypass the motorway and go around all the local roads and go to Dover.
Yes.
And when they got there, the police just went, go right the way back, the way you've just come, and clog it up the other way and join the back of the queue.
That's right. Well, I can remember when I was on the radio show with you last year, somebody came, I can't remember who it was, somebody came up with a suggestion of using the M26.
Oh, that was me.
I don't think it was you. I think you were one of them. But
somebody
said,
yeah,
if you use the M26, then traffic would keep flowing.
Yeah.
And that's a discrete part of
the motorway. The M26 is the longest piece of motorway in the UK without a junction on or off it. So it doesn't affect anyone.
No.
And it's 5 miles long or 7 miles long or whatever it is. And it's got four lanes of motorway, and it doesn't do anything.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep.
And if you park lorries on it, they don't need to use it to join the M25 to the M20 because you can go around to Swanley. Mm.
Sometimes we need some creative solutions, I think, to some of these problems.
Unbelievable.
Okay.
Carrying on with FSB news, though, there's some new laws being proposed to encourage cross-border online shopping. There's another rant of mine. having made a mess of it with digital moss in the first place, the EU are now desperately trying to dig themselves out of a hole. The European Commission has published draft legislation as part of its digital single marketing strategy. If implemented, the legislation would harmonise consumer law in relation to online shopping throughout the European Union, which the Commission hopes would result in more consumers purchasing goods online from traders in another member state. Although 50% of consumers in the EU shopped online in 2014, only 18% purchased goods within the EU. No, you don't say. I wonder why that might be. For those of you who don't know, the European Union, back last year, introduced a thing that said for digital sales, you have to charge VAT in the country in which the digital download is purchased. At the prevailing rate of VAT in that country.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't matter if you're not registered for VAT in your own country. Now, you try working out 28 different sets of VAT. And also, I did send them an email, which they did reply to, but they basically shrugged. And I said, if I'm a French citizen and my partner is Polish and we're in a car and we're partway through the Channel Tunnel, and I decide to download a book from Amazon in Luxembourg, what VAT rate shall I pay, please? And they went, you're just being difficult. Yeah, okay, fine. Well, you know, where did I purchase it?
I know.
Ridiculous. Anyway, they're trying to sort that out now by harmonising it. So presumably what they'll do is harmonise the VAT right across the European Union so that, you don't have to mess about. Anyway.
Well, it feels nice and sunny here in the studio, but it may well be pouring with rain outside. And many businesses have had to suffer with all the water and the floods lately. But the FSB is calling for help to ensure that small businesses can access affordable flood insurance. John Allen, who's the national chairman of the Federation of Small Businesses, said, FSB research published in July 2015 demonstrated that many smaller firms struggle to access affordable flood insurance, with 9% in flood risk areas reporting difficulties and 6% reporting that they have been refused cover. This equates to around 75,000 smaller businesses across the UK who are facing difficulties and 50,000 being refused. It's a long-standing issue, as we all know, and as ministers and the insurance industry plan to bring in the new flood re-scheme to back those refused cover, the FSB has expressed its deep concern to ministers that the insurance industry and the insurance industry that the smallest of businesses will now be excluded. Much like households, micro-businesses are those least able to negotiate competitive insurance when the new scheme is introduced in April 16. I have to say, as my husband's an insurance broker, as you know, Paul, and actually it's a really good point, this, that you actually should need some really good advice and somebody who knows what they're talking about to help businesses who think they are in flood risk areas.
Funny enough, it's funny you should say that, but on the show on the 23rd of February, we have a guest talking from the insurance industry talking about flood insurance. Yeah, Julie from Cascade Insurance.
Excellent.
So we're looking forward to that. Hey, but we're kind of at the end of the show now. I've just had one last tweet I can read out from the lovely Natalie. She says, the next Kent Creative Live meetup is at the Quarterhouse Folkestone on Tuesday the 2nd of February at 9:30, so do get along to that. What I want to tell you about now is what's coming up later on Channel Radio. Right after the show at 4 o'clock, we have the aforesaid Natalie Benet with Kent Creative Live. At 5 o'clock, we're joined by the ladies' favourite, Mr Craig Avery, in his stripy socks with his entertainment and film show. That's from 5 until 7 p.m. And then at 7 p.m. we have...
Welcome all to the New Potato Show.
18 tracks of unsigned new up-and-coming music with the fabulously talented Mr. Jamie Andrews and the New Potato Show. That is on at 7 p.m. and that's followed at 9 p.m. by our comedy show, I Was Lord Kitchener's Valet. A 1960s music and comedy show for an hour at 9 o'clock, and then we have
It's Club Culture with Boy George.
1, 2, 3, get down.
Full drum beat at the squidgy bass, I give you Vanilla Ace and it rhymes. That means I'm right on time. Welcome to Club Culture, where I control my very own dance universe. 1 hour or more of grooving delectables for your disco pleasure. I'm Boy George.
It's 1 hour of delectable, delicious dance music. It's Club Culture with Boy George on Channel Radio.
So we round the evening off once again on the Tuesday with the Club Culture show with the fabulous Boy George, and that's from 10 onwards. So do stay tuned to channelradio.co.uk for the rest of the evening. But for the moment, you've been listening to me, Paul Andrews, and the lovely Shirley Mansfield on the Business Bunker Show. I'd like to say a massive thank you to today's show sponsor, Telcare, the telecommunications providers, and our fabulous guests, Dr. Wayne Wright and Colin Davis of the Enterprise Foundation, Lawrence Ainsworth, author, high growth business consultant, an all-round great guy. Thank you so much for joining us on the Business Bunker Show. We will be back with you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Paul Andrews with the Business Bunker.